When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
And we're back on the Big FM 93.7 on the drive home with Sly. Joining us now, Richard Russell with, it's a South Central move to amend. South Central Wisconsin move to amend.
There you go.
Okay, good.
SWMTA for short.
It's a lot. All right. You know, here we are right on the cusp of a huge election. And what you're going to tell us is you want people to come to one more event the day after the election.
Right, because it's the fun part. You know, I'm sure if you're like everybody else, probably your entire listening audience, your inbox has been deluged with requests for money. Money, money, yes. Money. Please give us money.
And my commercial load has been filled with radio commercials with people attacking each other.
Yeah, but at least it's a way for you guys to make money, right?
Right.
Well, you figure after the election is all over, nobody's going to hit you up for bucks anymore. Well, we're going to hit you up for bucks one more time. But the deal is we're going to give you something in return for it. It's going to be a fundraiser for SWMTA because after the election is all over, it becomes abundantly clear that we're not doing this for partisan reasons. We're doing it as a basis of good government change. And what we're doing is putting on what we call a friend raiser. It's going to be Wednesday, November 5th, the day after the election, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Cargo Coffee at 750 East Washington Avenue.
In Madison.
And we're pretty sure that most folks probably didn't get enough Halloween out of their system on Friday. And so we're going to give them an opportunity to dress up in costume one more time. It's going to be the Roaring 2000s. You know, it's just like a couple of additional zeros on the Roaring 20s.
Mm, so this is sort of a Gilded Age.
Yes, yeah. Very much so. It's designed to evoke the concept of the Third Gilded Age, which is what we're in now. If you listen to Tom Hartman at all, he'll tell you that the First Gilded Age was actually back the thing that provoked the American Revolution because the British East India Company was basically exercising corporate dominance over the colonies at that time. The Second Gilded Age, of course, was the end of the 18th century. It's his contention that we are in the Third Gilded Age right now because big money and big corporations are taking over our political process, starting to dominate our society, and the average Joe just doesn't really stand a chance against all those big bucks. And so we're going to, you know, turn the tables and sort of celebrate the idea that we're in the Gilded Age because the way the Gilded Age ended, the way both of those ended is the people rose up and said, enough of this.
There's a couple things that are different from both those situations. It's that you're asking to amend the Constitution, okay? Second of all, partly because of globalization and these terrible free trade deals, these oligarchs have a lot more leverage than they used to. It's like, we'll just move the jobs out of the country, right? They have this is a steeper fight than those were.
It's tough to say that the globalization that we have today is any worse than the British East India Company, which was not only a global enterprise, it was pretty much a monopoly global enterprise.
Right. But in contrast, we had this great industrial revolution in America, and we saw it helped raise a middle class, and we've seen that destroyed. I'm sure you saw the study the other day from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee about wages in America, wages in Wisconsin, and how fewer and fewer are middle class wages and more are low-paying jobs. Does America have the civic structure anymore to fight back or the will to fight back? That's what I wonder about.
Well, it's a good question, and when you talk about civic structure, that's exactly what we're about at SWMTA, South Central Wisconsin Move to Amend, is we want to take advantage of the mechanisms that have been put in place by our founders that say, okay, here's the roadmap for the country. We call it the Constitution. We recognize it's not perfect. We're going to establish a procedure within the Constitution that allows us to change it as time goes by and circumstances change. We're not going to make it easy to do. It's only happened 27 times. But we are going to make it possible, and we are making use of those mechanisms to say, yes, let's fix it one more time to specify very specifically that corporations are not people and money is not speech, and the supreme law of the land says so.
All right, so this is 6 to 9 at Cargo Coffee on East Washington Madison on Wednesday night.
Wednesday
right?
night, the day right. after the election, where I'm sure the conversation will turn very heavily on the results.
And we don't know what those are as of yet. All right, so how much is this going to cost?
Well, it's free, basically, but we ask for a $10 donation, and students, of course, are, you know, we understand life in studentdom means that you don't have much bucks. You're probably facing a lifetime worth of debt load just for going to college, so students get in free.
So what does this money go towards?
It goes toward the activities of South Central Wisconsin Move to Amend, which are pretty much grassroots sort of things. We don't buy ads. I'm sorry. Got to tell your management we aren't going to be buying any ads on your show. What we do is grassroots organizing in communities around Wisconsin, where we are involved in the first two steps of our five-step agenda. And we will quite forthrightly say, yes, we do have an agenda. You want me to lay it out for you?
Sure.
Step one, education. We got to bring people up to speed on what's going on and what we can do about it. Step two is we get communities all across the state of Wisconsin to pass either resolutions by the governing body, county boards, city councils, town boards, and so on, or adopt an opportunity for a referendum for the citizens of that community to themselves go on record as saying, we think the state of Wisconsin should be asking for a constitutional amendment. The third step is to take the results of all those resolutions and referenda to the Wisconsin state legislature and say, here, these are your constituents. These are the citizens of the state of Wisconsin. They think that you should be petitioning Congress for this amendment. We get that through the Wisconsin state legislature. Then we go through Congress and get them to adopt the amendment, and then it requires us to go to three-quarters of the states and have them ratify that amendment.
You haven't been invited to an ALEC convention, have you?
Have not. I'm probably the last person besides Mark Pocan or Chris Taylor that Taylor, they would ever right? like to see at one of those conventions.
I love their stories from the. I love having Chris Taylor now on coming back from those things. You know, she tells me that frequently what's discussed is they kind of brag at how they cut people out of the process. It's like, we can do this, this, and this, and this without people voting. And we can cut people out here, 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 and here.
Yeah, and the sad thing is that they have forced the other side to play the game. You notice that Obama, who has been really restrained when it comes to being able to issue executive orders or signing statements, I mean, you know, compared to George W. Bush, who had, what, like 400 signing statements where he said, yeah, you guys passed this law and I'm going to sign it, but I'm not going to do it. You know, he had all those things. Obama has dialed way back on that, but nonetheless, he's been forced to use executive orders kind of reluctantly because he just can't get Congress to move on anything.
So this is, there are some people that think that amending the Constitution isn't the smartest way to do this. The better way to do this is to go through the electoral process and get a better Supreme Court.
Well, that would be dandy if we elected the Supreme Court. The sad fact of the matter is that the Supreme Court justices are not very heavily involved in the political process. They're appointees, and they're lifetime appointees, which means that they're not subject to the whims of the moment or the political pressures, the tides and the currents and so on, which was by design. We understand why they did it that way. But what that has done is it's created a giant blind spot because they just don't understand how the political process works in America. The people who do understand it is the elected representatives of the state legislatures and the representatives and senators in Congress. The people who have to go through the political process to get their jobs in the first place do understand it. And over the course of the 20th century, every one of the 50 state legislatures and Congress said, yeah, we understand that money corrupts the political process, and we're going to regulate the daylights out of it.
All right. We'll be back with Richard Russell, South Central Wisconsin, Move to Amend on the Big FM 93.7. And we're back on the Big FM 93.7 on the Drive Home with Sly. Richard Russell, nice enough to stop by and see us on this day before the election coming up Wednesday night at Cargo Coffee East. That's 750 East Washington Avenue. You're having a fundraiser for Move to Amend.
We actually call it a friendraiser.
A friendraiser.
We're not so much about the money. I mean, we need some minimal amounts of money in order to run our operations, but we're not into the big heavy duty expenditures.
You don't expect the Wisconsin Club for Growth to be there, or
sure,
Wisconsin Manufacturers.
We invite them all.
This is awfully close to the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, isn't
right
it?
Right down the street. Yeah, maybe they can swing by on their way home from work.
How did you get involved in this, Richard?
Well, it's a basic good government thing. We are strictly nonpartisan. We wish that the issue itself were viewed as nonpartisan by the members of the various political parties, because frankly, we think it is to their advantage. And when we say their advantage, we talk about the individual elected representatives who have to spend inordinate amounts of time on the phone begging for money. They have to wheedle, they have to beg, they have to cajole, they have to schmooze, they have to suck up. And that's just the way the game is played. And even the people who hate money in politics have to play that stupid game.
I saw John McCain say the other day that he didn't think the system was going to change until there was a big scandal, that's what it was going to take. Now, I don't agree with John McCain on much, but I, you know, on this issue, I think I wish he'd been a little stronger when that issue came down in 2010. He was kind of quiet about it, but when the Supreme Court made that terrible decision. But isn't he right? Isn't that what it's going to take? Don't people need to actually... This probably seems kind of nebulous to them. There's been a lot of money in politics for a long time, and unless you follow closely, you don't understand the floodgate aspect of it. Do you actually need to see a scandal?
I worry that what it's going to take is more than a scandal. It may take an actual uprising. That's really what ended the first Gilded Age, is the American colonists just finally rose up and said, we can't take this anymore, and they fought a revolution. It should not come to that. We hope it doesn't come to that. We have the example of the second Gilded Age, where we had reformers like Teddy Roosevelt come along and say, you know, we're going to bust these trusts. We're going to clamp some regulations and restrictions down. And they managed to accomplish that through the political process. But what it took was real, sincere, serious leadership. And it took a grassroots I don't want to say uprising, because it wasn't quite that extreme, but it took a lot of grassroots support of average people saying, yeah, we don't have to put up with this, and we won't put up with this.
Did Barack Obama turn out to be kind of a bad messenger for this? I know that he challenged the Supreme Court when they were sitting in front of him in a joint session of Congress in a State of the Union address, but let's be honest, when he ran for president in 2008, who blew the lid off the voluntary donation limit? He did, right? Now, it's true, there were a lot of people involved with his campaign and a lot of small donations, but you could say between the last two Democratic presidents, between Bill Clinton taking soft money and Barack Obama, you know, blowing the lid off and kind of ending that the government funding of presidential campaigns in the general election, the Democrats have done a lot of damage here, too.
If Barack Obama had shown up in Manchester, New Hampshire in 1980, he would have been slightly to the right of Reagan and the original George W. H.W. Bush. That's the way he's governed. And that's not inappropriate. That's largely where the country is. The real shock is how far right the Republicans have gone. There is no left wing left in America anymore. What we've got is a moderate party, which is the Democrats, and we got a far-right party, and there is no leftist alternative.
The center of gravity moves without a lot of people noticing, right? It kind of slowly moved that target. You know, so now when you fight for things like collective bargaining, you seem radical when 20 years ago they weren't. That wasn't a radical notion at all.
Contraception. We used to take that for granted for like 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
And it's on the table again. Who would have guessed?
All right, so this is the people that you work with. I don't know how many of their people you have in your organization now, and I'm not asking for any numbers, but is it a little different than other what people would call progressive groups? Is it a little more variation to it?
We don't want to present ourselves as being progressive. We're a good government group. And we're trying desperately to avoid being labeled as partisan in any respect.
Well, it's true, but, you know, if you look historically back at Wisconsin, Bob La Follette and, you know, Teddy Roosevelt, that word progressive was attached to them.
Yep, and people are trying to attach it to us, too. But as I said earlier, we really think that it's in the best interest of all of the elected officials to get money out of politics, because at any given time, whether you're progressive, moderate, conservative, libertarian, green, you name it, at any given time, somebody can come in and say, we don't like you because you took a bad stand on a particular bill. Like John McCain, for example, was in favor of campaign finance reform. which made him, you know, suspect to an awful lot of Republicans and pro-business conservatives. And he had enough stature that they didn't throw a primary election at him, but they could do it to anybody at any time because that's the way money works.
So when you look at all this, in order to amend the Constitution, you have to have a pretty wide coalition of people. Culturally, because conservatives are very suspect of anybody that wants to, they view what you're doing not as an attack on some sort of bribery or corruption in politics. They view it as an attack on business, and they view it as an attack on, they view it as pro-big government, and they view it as an attack on business. In their lens, that's what they see it, right? Don't you think that's fair? A lot of activists,
that's
right?
That's probably a realistic view, yeah.
Okay. How do you've got to bring some people that have some sort of conservative leanings into this movement, right?
We don't have to bring them in. They're here.
Are they?
We have had over 40 referenda, actual citizen referenda, in various communities across Wisconsin. Every place from urban centers like Milwaukee and Madison to rural areas up north to traditionally conservative areas like the Fox River Valley, Waukesha County. The lowest approval we've gotten for our referenda, which says we should amend the Constitution, the lowest we've gotten is 61%. In many places, it's been 75, 80, 83%. And so people are all, if you ask common citizens, what do you think about this idea about getting money out of politics? They're all in favor of it.
Long before Citizens United and long before Russ Feingold and John McCain were taking on soft money at the federal level, there were people that some viewed as benevolent, whether it be George Soros, whether it be Michael Bloomberg on a specific issue, whether it be this Steyer guy out of California with the whole fighting global warming. They're viewed as sort of benevolent. They're not really putting big money into politics to enrich themselves. You could say the Koch brothers are probably trying to enrich themselves with their policies, right? I understand they have an ideology, but they're clearly trying to benefit financially from what they're doing. Is it still bad? In other words,
absolutely. I mean, you take a look at the people who are considered viable candidates for public office. You get people like Mitt Romney and Ron Johnson, who are millionaires on the Republican side, and you get people like Herb Kohl and Mary Burke, who are millionaires on the Democratic side. And in order to just get your foot in the door, you either have to bring a big wallet or you have to bring a big load of financial supporters. And that just sucks. There's no reason why you shouldn't be able to run for office in this country just because you have good ideas, a record of accomplishment, and some sense of integrity. But the only way people will take you seriously anymore is if you can show up with money in hand.
$4 billion that they've counted so far in these midterm elections, and I'm sure that number's going to double.
A midterm election, $4 billion. We're not electing the president. We're only electing a third of the Senate. It's only something like less than half of the governors, and we're spending $4 billion on the process of trying to convince like 5 to 10% of the populace that is currently undecided.
And here's the sad thing. I heard Nicholas Confessori, the lead investigator on all this campaign finance money thing for the New York Times, kind of use Mitch McConnell or George Will's line that, gee, I don't really think it's that much money. Look what Procter & Gamble spends on potato chips. That's the New York Times. That's the lead. He's supposedly somebody investigating all this money in politics, and that was his attitude. That tells you something.
It does. As long as we're dropping names, let me drop two more quick names for you. Sean Michael
Dargan.
Yeah, he's great. If you know those guys, those are going to be the entertainers that we're going to have at our fundraiser Wednesday night, 6 to 9 at Cargo Coffee, 750 East Washington Avenue. And because we're doing the speakeasy thing where you got to have a passcode to get in, because it's one of those kind of places, the passcode, and we're giving it away for free. Corporations are not people, my friend. That'll get you into Cargo Coffee on Wednesday night.
Richard Russell, South Central Wisconsin, Move to Amend. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Sly.
This is Sly on the Big FM 93.7.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.